Welcome to the Dear People of Earth podcast. Today, we discuss Project Brainstorm, a reported disinformation campaign developed by the Department of Defense in the United States to gauge reaction from the populace around large-scale UFO sightings. All rights are reserved and no part of this recording may be used without prior express written consent. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks for listening to Dear People of Earth podcast. I want to start out today with a new sponsor, Monster Energy Zero Sugar Ultra Strawberry Dreams. Just take one sip and you'll be crazy for the Ultra Strawberry Dreams. Wonderfully sweet, while slightly tart, this easy drinking Ultra tastes like a dream. Packed with the Monster Energy blend you love with just 10 calories and zero sugar. Consume responsibly, not recommended for children, people sensitive to caffeine, pregnant women, or women who are nursing. Now, we're going to be on to the episode. We're going to talk about the Phoenix Lights. Most of you out in UFO land know what this is. It was about 26 years or so ago. Some lights over Phoenix, witnessed by thousands of people. First, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get into what they were. Read a little bit from an article I recently wrote. On UAPmax.com. Before I get into that, I would also like to ask that if you wouldn't mind, at the end of this episode, go on to whatever podcast application that you use. Give our show a like, or if you can, I certainly would love to get 5 stars, but I won't ask for that. I want you to give your honest review, but it would make a huge difference in how this podcast grows for you to do that. As you can see, we picked up our first real sponsor already, which is fantastic. I'm very psyched about that and glad that Monster came on board. But of course, we want to get out to as many people as possible. So if you're so inclined, if you're able to do that, I appreciate that. But let's also give you another quick note that I am a little sick right now. So if my voice is a little bit off or if I have a little cough here or there, I do apologize. But not much I can do. But I did want to get this out to you this week. So what were the Phoenix Lights? They were a UFO sighting that occurred that was March 13th, 1997. It was very enigmatic at the time. A lot of people saw things hovering in the sky for a long period of time. It was actually a series of eyewitness accounts. It happened across, I think it was about 300 miles. So it wasn't one in particular sighting. It wasn't just the sighting over Phoenix, but it was another encounter and another sighting. I believe it was southwest of the city as well. But thousands of witnesses across Arizona reported seeing, it was a spectacle is what they said, in the night sky. And it sparked curiosity, a lot of intrigue over the years. A lot of theories and explanations have emerged. But the truth behind the Phoenix Lights, it's not fully there, but I'm going to talk to you about something called Project or Operation Brainstorm, and it's spelled B-R-A-N-E as opposed to B-R-A-I-N, that was talked to me about the same whistleblower that I was talking to about some of the names that we've been naming. So what we'll do is I'll kind of talk to you about the event, talk about eyewitness accounts, official explanations, and why it kind of endures and the reason behind, why the conspiracy theory it's why it's still out there. But on that night, on March 13th, the skies above Arizona became a stage for a remarkable display. Sightings began in Henderson, Nevada, where an alert observer reported a colossal dark V-shaped object gracefully gliding southeastward through the night sky. The unidentified craft boasted 6 imposing lights along its leading edge and moved silently, leaving witnesses in awe. And meanwhile, in Polden, Arizona, a police officer made a striking discovery, a cluster of 5 reddish-orange lights. He observed 4 of them traveling in tight formation while the 5th trailed slightly behind. The absence of sound and the unusual behavior of these lights left witnesses perplexed. As the night progressed, the reports poured in from across the state. UFO reporting centers, local police departments, and even Luke Air Force Base received numerous phone calls from eyewitnesses, each sharing their bewildering experiences. The descriptions varied, with some witnesses reporting lights similar to the initial sightings, while others witnessed different configurations and colors. Some described leisurely gliding lights, while others claimed to have seen them darting across the sky at high speeds. The most frequently reported sighting was that of a massive, wedge-shaped craft adorned with lights along its ventral surface. So here's part of the two issues about this sighting, that the reason why it's continued on. So we're going to talk about the official report, which was, of course, flares later, and A-10s. But we'll talk about the differences between the two sightings, which, of course, one of them is they saw a V. So eyewitness accounts were very across Phoenix itself, or across the part of the city itself, it was more the lights. But when you get outside the city, people described that they actually saw the leading edges of the craft. So the official explanation doesn't really kind of match up to what people actually saw. And we're talking about thousands of people here. It wasn't like, you know, five or six people here or there, or whatever. This was thousands of people, which is why Project or Operation Brainstorm came about. And I'll explain that as we go. So multiple witnesses located north of Phoenix reported spotting the object, marveling at its silent passage and its ability to navigate between mountain peaks. So one of the cool things was Kurt Russell was actually one of the people that called this thing in. So among the witnesses who observed the Phoenix lights was a civilian pilot who, unbeknownst to him at the time, would later become a well-known actor, Kurt Russell. Now, Kurt was already well-known at the time, 97, but he was also a pilot. In the midst of a landing, he spotted six luminous objects hanging stationary near Sky Harbor International Airport. So to his surprise, air traffic control radar screens remained empty. No confirmation of his sighting. It wasn't until years later that he realized the significance of what he had witnessed that night, and his account adds another layer of credibility to the already extensive list of witnesses. So the Air Force's explanation, initially, they said they didn't have anything in the air. There was nothing out there. They weren't doing any maneuvers, nothing. And they'll say that there was a communication between the reporting of that and the actual event and the actual maneuvers that were taking place. So they attribute it to A-10 aircraft engaged in training exercises. According to the explanation, the lights witnessed by thousands of people were merely illumination flares dropped during the exercises. The slow descent of these flares, caused by the heat acting on their parachutes, created the illusion of lights ascending or remaining stationary in the sky. While the explanation may account for some of the sightings, it fails to address the massive craft observed by numerous individuals. So despite their explanation and the skepticism and alternate theories surrounding the Phoenix lights, it still persists. And again, I'll explain more of that in a moment. But some skeptics argue that witnesses may have misconstrued multiple aircraft flying closely together as a single object. But that argument fails to explain the detailed and consistent accounts of those who observed a single silent craft at close range. So some of these people said it was only 1,000 feet in the air, which is not very high, not for an aircraft to be moving silently. You know, you would think of a stationary aircraft like a helicopter. Well, we do know that there are helicopters now that don't make noise. They went in on the this when they went after Osama bin Laden. Those silent operating helicopters were kind of let out of the bag at that point. But again, that was many, many years later. So, you know, how long did DARPA or how long did these other places, you know, the Department of Defense have these things hiding? But it doesn't account for the specifics of seeing a large V shape. And again, these weren't just a couple people. These were multiple, you know, thousands of people that saw this. In the case of the actual object itself, it was hundreds of people. There's a thing out there that it was a hoax, a result of mass hysteria. But they also failed to explain the vast number of credible witnesses and their consistent descriptions. Excuse me. So the investigations and research efforts for the years following the Phoenix Lights, investigations, research efforts, they've attempted to shed light on the mysterious event. Independent researchers, UFO enthusiasts, and organizations dedicated to uncovering the truth have analyzed witness testimonies, conducted interviews, and examined photographic and video evidence. Despite the efforts, a conclusive explanation for the Phoenix Lights remains elusive. So there was a call for scientific study. There was a lot of skepticism. It was the governor that came out. He was former military himself. Came out with the little alien, like a little sideshow type thing. And later on, he recanted his He basically said he thought something was there. He thought it was otherworldly. Other accounts have kind of called that into question, that he was rather dismissive. But this ties into what I have talked to again, one of the people that I've been talking to, and it was a disinformation / psychological warfare type thing, or a psyop. And the more they talked about it, the more it made sense. So the initial day or two leading up to the official explanation from the Air Force was that they didn't have anything in the air. And then supposedly, this is what occurred behind the scenes, that there was a Department of Defense psychological operations department that said, hey, we can use this to our advantage. And they wanted to look into the large scale reaction in this case, because it was so many thousands of people that were calling in and saying things and media reports, that the Department of Defense or a department within the Department of Defense decided to call this a special operation or a special project and utilize that. Now, I don't know, and nor does this person know, if that was a result of actual operations that were occurring or were or had occurred by the military, or if they used this particular situation to gauge sentiment. But there were a tremendous amount of reports of people that were interviewed by researchers, and some of these researchers apparently turned out to be government officials. And as a result of that, that's where this Operation Brainstorm or Project Brainstorm came into effect. And it is supposedly in effect till today, that they are still using reports from this, and they are still working on what has happened over this time. For all I know, this silly little podcast might have something to do with it. I don't know. But they do apparently gauge the results of what happens during events like this, during large sighting events. This was supposedly done in the 50s. There was I don't know if it was Blue Book or what it was a part of, but there were so-called men in black that came out and talked about the lights, that the UFOs that were seen over the White House. And that was a well-documented event, excuse me, during the 50s. And whether that's wrapped into something that's still going on today, I highly doubt it, but it's very possible, I guess. But part of that is also, it's a persistent case or a persistent idea that people have, that there are psyops being done on the American people and in general across the globe. And it makes a little bit of sense that if the United States and or other governments are actively involved with NHI, that they would use specific sightings or specific events to their advantage to gauge what will happen, how the public will respond. And it goes to show another level of how they hide things. So it comes down to this. What's your belief in the Phoenix Lights? There's a couple things about it that don't make any sense to me, and then there's a couple things that do make sense to me. One, I don't know if you've ever heard an A-10, but an A-10 is extraordinarily loud. They call them warthogs. And when they're firing, when they're shooting, if all you have to do is go on, I'm sure YouTube has a ton of videos about an A-10. You would know if an A-10 was over you. Like, there's just no doubt about it. I mean, the thing could be up pretty high, and you're still going to know an A-10 is over you. They're crazy loud. They're obnoxious loud. Reason why they call them a warthog: one, they're ugly; B, they're super loud. Two, there's been some evidence out there that people have done. And if you look this up, it's another thing. I know I give you some Google exercises, but there have been some pretty consistent pictures out there of the lights, right? And you can literally take a line or a ruler, you can put it through Photoshop, whatever, and you can draw a line from the on the V's, on the two leading edges of the V. You can take a line and draw it at the exact bottom of what they call a flare over to the last flare. And the line goes exactly consistent. Like, there's no deviation in any way. I find it incredibly hard to believe that things with the flag, with the a flare with a little parachute and the heat being able to hold those aloft at an exact line. And you can see it for yourself. Go look. There's people have taken rulers and put a line right to it. I mean, it's exact. Like, you can zoom in on it. Like, it's right to the pixel, just about, that it's an exact line that's going. I find that very hard to believe. And then the other part of that, the I don't know if you want to call it the first or the secondary sighting of the crafts. Multiple people have said that they saw the craft physically. Like, it was one thing. It was not, you know, I said earlier, helicopters, right? And we know we have helicopters that don't make much noise now. They said that's not what it was. This was a leading edge. Like, you could see from one to one to one to one, you could see the exact edging of the craft. So it's a very difficult thing that to figure it out. I don't know about all the radar. I'm going to take a sip of my coffee here. I'm sorry. My throat is killing me. Thank you for letting me do that. It just seems very strange to me that the government would again say it's flares, right? It's none of it adds up. But the ongoing efforts of the PSYOP do make sense, because as we move forward into disclosure, you'll look at I'm going to fast forward this now to the Schumer legislation. I'm not totally convinced that that's going to do anything. I feel like it's more obfuscation and it's more optics for the public, as opposed to real tacit admission. I'm hopeful, but I'm also reticent. That's why I believe disclosure has to come more from people out here doing the work, ground pounding, trying to get people to talk. I think that's where disclosure is going to come from. And it gets to a point where it's so overwhelming that it can't be disguised anymore. It's going to have to come from us. I just believe that. It's going to have to come from people actually getting out there and doing the work, which is what I'm trying to do. And a lot of others are as well. So one of the other things that we are trying to get done, and I'm talking to a couple other people about this, is a fund for a whistleblower, that would specifically, be for an individual that would come forward, that has specifics with, it's going to be a lower tier individual. It's how it's probably going to work. Because let's face it, you talk to CEOs and things like that, and you offer them X amount of dollars, they already have it. It's not something that's an enticement to them. It has to come from a lower tier person that's going to blow the whistle, and it's probably going to come from Well, more than likely somebody from within the military, or somebody that's working on the, you know, reverse engineering of specifics. And that, again, is one of the reasons why I've been pushing so much with these naming names and doing things along that nature, because I think that the more pressure that we put on, the more we can actually get a little bit done. One of the other things, and I'm going to be back right in a moment, I need to grab a piece of paper that I have been writing on. So for 1 second, we're going to hold on 1 moment, and I will be right back with the magic of podcasts. And we're back. Look at that. Magic, magic. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go into the second half of this, and that is specific to naming a couple of names. And these are, again, people that have been allegedly working on these programs. And part of the reason I did the first part of this podcast was because this second part of the podcast, and that is that one of the persons that were allegedly on this, his name is Ryan Skaggs. He is a PhD. He is an Air Force leader. He is a national security and intelligence professional. And he is currently with the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, specifically Advanced Air and Space Studies. And it's his job, allegedly, to work on Project Brainstorm, Operation Brainstorm. And he is one of the people that was responsible for figuring out the information. Now, he's a younger guy. He's only been, I believe, in his position for 4 or 5 months. Again, this is all brand new information to me as well. But he has apparently, from the understanding that I have, he has been the person that has also put together more studies, meaning there are supposed to be things that are either coming up or that he is working on directly for Aero as well. He has been named as one of the resources. I don't know if it was called a resource officer or a resource for Aero, for Dr. Kirkpatrick. But he was also named as a person that was working with NASA as well. Again, the guy's name is Ryan Skaggs, S-K-A-G-G-S, and he is allegedly one of the individuals that is, excuse me, working on part of the psychological side of things, and works also together with investigative branches within Aero. It was told to me that it was possible that he vetted David Grush for psychological whatevers. Again, some of this I don't quite understand, or I don't know it. but it was interesting the way that he was correlated to possibly be also in the know of vetting other sources that go to Aero or that have given testimony to Aero. And that he does that end of it. So he's another intelligence official that is somehow or somewhat in this. Reached out to him on 4 different platforms, and also through direct communication through email. He gave me I'm not interested in talking. It's not a subject I can talk about. Again, I have not received any type of tacit denials from anybody I've ever tried to contact. What I get back is more than likely, I can't talk about it, I won't talk about it, or I'm not interested in talking about it. and I have outlined very specifically, and I'm not saying all of them here because I need to keep some of these in my back pocket, but I've outlined to these people specifically what has been told to me that they are involved with. I usually get a really quick response, and I usually also get, if I don't get a quick response, I usually also get a ghosting, which is in the case of another person, and I'm going to bring up their name here. His name is Cameron Mowinkle, M-O-H-W-I-N-K-L-E. He is a senior defense intelligence advisor for Five Eyes, F-I-V-E, eyes. Now, why is that important? So Cameron, allegedly, is the person that is a go-between between Five Eyes. It's an intelligence alliance, and it is comprised of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. They're part of the multilateral UK-US agreement, a treaty for joint cooperation in signals intelligence. Now, it can also refer to an Atlantic Charter, the Brucia Agreement. They are directly out of the NSA, among other offices. They can be traced to informal secret meetings during World War II between codebreakers and the Allies. The Atlantic Charter that established their vision in the post-World War, post-war world. what he does is, allegedly, go between the United States and these other countries, and they share intelligence back and forth specific to NHI. Cameron specifically, is the go-between, allegedly. And again, I reached out to Cameron, and he started to talk with me very briefly. Sorry, my dog is shaking. That's Fredo. He's my apparently my podcast partner. He was given an opportunity to speak about one extremely specific allegation made against him. We were initially talking. He said that he could not have... could not have discussions about this, but, and I asked him specifically, do you deny the allegations of that? He says, no, I really can't even have a discussion about it. He says that, it was an interesting topic to have a talk about, is what he said. And he said something along the lines of, now this was a phone conversation that we had. I actually, is one of the few people I've actually had a actual conversation with. But he's very squirrely and sketchy about it. He's basically saying, that's an interesting topic. Yeah. He's like, where'd you get the, one of the first things he says, where'd you get the information? Of course I didn't tell him. But it was an interesting back and forth that we had. He was more quizzical that I was able to kind of get to him. I mean, some of his information is out there. There's not a tremendous amount out there. But I found it a fun conversation to have with this guy because I could tell that he was definitely like trying to probe me for probe. That's probably not the right thing to say when I'm talking about NHI, but he was trying to figure out how I got his information. And I think that he was interested in it. So he said, well, send me a note, and he gave me his .mil address, and I sent him a note, and I got ghosted. Because when I started to line out what I had, because when we were on the phone conversation, he kind of laughed it off a little bit, and then as he said, "Well, send me this, send me the note, and I'll see what I can come up with." I said, "Okay." I got ghosted on every platform that he was on that I was able to find him on, so I either hit a nerve or somebody got a hold of it or something. I really should. I don't know if I should post the message or not, but maybe I will do that. Maybe I'll put that in a thing on the website, but it was just kind of an interesting interaction. So part of this goes back to, the Echelon surveillance system in the 1960s. It was developed by, Five Eye to monitor the communications of the former Soviet Union and Eastern Bloc. And in the late 90s, the existence of Echelon was diagnosed or disclosed to the public. Which triggered a big problem in the EU Parliament, to a lesser extent in the United States Congress. But they expanded their surveillance capabilities during the course of the War on Terror. And a lot of emphasis was placed on monitoring the World Wide Web. That's pretty wild. So former NSA contractor Edward Snowden described the Five Eyes as a supranational intelligence organization that does not answer to the known laws of its own countries. So it's a pretty interesting development when I found this person, when he was revealed to me, and then I found out where he was involved and what he did. So basically, his entire world is as secret and as compartmentalized as you could possibly get. And again, it was told to me that he was allegedly the person that was dealing with the NHI situation. A lot more is known by those countries. Obviously, the United States knows a lot more than all the others, but he was known to, I don't know, ferret out information, but part of his job is to make sure that people are aware in these other nations of what's going on. So that's going to wrap it up for this one. I have three more in the next episode that I'm going to be talking about. One of them is going to be a major, major player. I am doing my best to get to him and talk to him. He is a known person in this field, no longer in service of the country, but known to the UFO community. I have some background information on him that I'm trying to get, and I'm trying to do a couple back channels here to kind of get to him. So hopefully I'll be able to, I would actually like to be able to have an interview with him, but we'll see how that works out. So on a future update, I also, I don't know if you, I'm sure some of you know him, Dave Foley. He's an actor and a comedian. I'm going to be doing an interview with him, video interview with him soon. We're just kind of working out the timeline to get that done, but he's a big UFO guy, and I've been talking to him. So again, be looking for that. That's going to be coming up soon. So again, Dave Foley is going to be on Dear People of Earth on a video podcast. That ought to be fun. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things, not just UFO stuff, but I'm going to be talking about some fun stuff with him as well. So I appreciate you listening. Again, go get your Monster Energy drinks, and thank you for listening in on this episode of Dear People of Earth.
Thank you for listening to the Dear People of Earth podcast. All rights are reserved and no part of this recording may be used without prior express written consent. Thank you for listening.